In my keynotes and workshops, when I get to talk about trust law number three, that trust is personal and in general relative, I start by asking this question. Do you want to be trusted by everyone? Only a few people, if at all, raise their hands. So I change the question to, can you be trusted by everyone? That's an easier question to answer because the answer is no. You cannot be trusted by everyone. But why? Because trust is relative. The same behavior that would cause one person to trust you could cause another person to distrust you. But in this episode, I want to show you how you can be trusted by more people simply by exhibiting different behaviors. Just to be clear, I'm not suggesting that you change who you are, that you pretend to be somebody else. Just show different sides of you. I'll explain more right after this. Welcome to The Trust Show. I'm Yoram Solomon, your host, the author of The Book of Trust, and facilitator of the Trust Habits Workshop. My mission is simple. I want to help you form habits that build your trustworthiness, because the answer to this question will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can I trust you? First, I have to start with a story, obviously. Back in 2000, I sold the company in Silicon Valley. I negotiated the acquisition. I didn't own the company. I owned a percentage of the company, but I negotiated the acquisition. So I sold a company called Voyager Technologies to a company called PCTEL. And I remember after the deal has closed that the controller and myself, Lin Chan, I still remember her, we were having a nice dinner, just the two of us, because we were really the operatives behind the acquisition, behind the transaction. She was on PCTEL's side. I was on my side. And we were having this dinner to celebrate. Not too many people knew how much work that two of us have put into it. Anyway, we were having this nice dinner. And Lin said, I guess that... as of tomorrow, you are a PCTEL employee. And I told her, well, I guess as of tomorrow, I'm unemployed. And she looked at me kind of puzzled and she asked, how come you're unemployed? I mean, you come with the acquisition. That was part of it. I said, yes, but see, every employee in Voyager has already received an employment letter from PCTEL. But I didn't. I didn't receive an employment letter. So she was shocked and she immediately went out and made a phone call and she came back and she said, well, I have something to tell you. The reason you didn't receive it is because they want to interview you because the position you're going to get or the position that they want to take you into is the vice president of marketing for the company, which would have been like three layers higher than what I thought I would get. I thought I was going to be, you know, I sold a wireless company. I thought I was going to be the wireless product manager or something like this, or even business line manager. I didn't expect them to ask me to be the vice president of marketing and initially product marketing for the entire company, which was a public $2.2 billion market cap company at the time. Well, I was surprised. And sure enough, they invited me to start going through a round of interviews. And the interviews were with all of those who are going to be my peers, the other vice presidents in the company. Some of them, two of them, were actually two of the founders of the company and the CEO. And so I started going around them. I had great conversations with every one of them. And eventually they all got together and they said, yes, we want to have Yoram be the vice president of marketing. But the funny thing is, if they had to talk to each other and describe the person they talked to, they would probably be puzzled because they would think that they each talked to another person. Now, I did not pretend to be a different person for each one of them. I did not mislead anyone. What did I do? Before I get there, let's talk about trust for a minute. One of the things that make my approach to trust unique is that I consider trust to be relative. Relative and personal. Trust law number three, trust is personal. And what I'm going to do now is kind of take you through what I say when in a keynote or a workshop when I get to trust law number three. I ask people, are you familiar with a website called Rate My Professors, ratemyprofessors.com? And then I tell them the story that Shira, my younger daughter, when she was in college, she was signing up for classes, and I noticed that she went to this website called Rate My Professors. And I asked her about that website, and she was showing me that students anonymously post reviews of their professors in different classes for other students to consider whether they want to take a class with this professor or not. And I thought that was brilliant. I mean, a review system for professors, that's brilliant. But wait a minute. I'm a professor at SMU. Do I have a page on Rate My Professors? So we looked up my name, and sure enough, I do. And I looked at the reviews there, and so the first review that I saw gave me 5 out of 5. And it says this: Professor Solomon is awesome. I really enjoyed his class and lectures. If you're interested in starting a business, this class is a great intro as it focuses specifically, and so on and so forth. He gives good feedback. His lectures apply to assignment, very clear, gives very good direction. 5 out of 5. I am awesome, right? Now, you think I'm telling you this to brag? Well, actually, yeah, of course. No, I'm not. I'm not telling you this to brag. I'm not telling you this to recruit you to my class at SMU. I'm telling you because I want to tell you what the next one was. Okay, get ready for some vulnerability. Mine. Don't worry, not yours. Next review gives me 1 out of 5. Just to be clear, there is no 0. 1 is the lowest. 1 out of 5, and it ranks as awful. Not awesome. Awful. Starts with AW, but that's the only similarity. And it says this course was mostly about his own accomplishments rather than a broader view of peer-reviewed techniques of success. He uses his own self-published works as material. His attitude was condescending, arrogant, but he's an easy grader, which is the only thing that matters in college, right? That I'm an easy grader. Well, why am I showing you these two, or why am I telling you about these two? Because if you looked at the dates, you will see that one of them was given on November 20th of 2019. The other was given on November 30th of 2019, within 10 days. This is 2019, so this is before COVID. So there's no remote, there is no online. Students had to be in class. I only teach one class per semester. I only taught one class per semester. It looks like now I'm going to start teaching 2 classes per semester. So these two students had to have been sitting in the same classroom, in the same class. Now, I never gave less than a B minus, I think. I haven't given those since I don't know when. But in 2019, I don't think that I gave any. So it wasn't the grade. Plus, they didn't know. Well, they could have known what the grade was at that time, but it wasn't the grade. So what was it? Well, this is where we go into the elephant in the room and what makes my approach unique. And that is, the trust is not absolute or universal. There is no checklist of everything that makes a person trusted versus not trusted, or trustworthy versus not trustworthy. And not each one of them has an absolute or universal right or wrong, black or white. We're all different. You know, we're different in how we look at things. And those two students were different. Now, some things are absolute and universal. Like, for example, telling the truth. You will not trust somebody who lies to you, knowingly and intentionally. I mean, we can start wondering about someone who is lying to me, but they really do believe their own lies. So they don't think that they're lying or that they are actively lying. But that's besides the point. So some things are absolute. Some things are universal. Some things are more local like a cultural thing, maybe even a corporate culture, you know, traditions that a company has that would cause one person who does them and complies with them to be trusted, the other who does not comply with them not to be trusted. But rest of it is relative. And I'll give you an example. Procrastination. Is procrastination good or bad? You know, if you Google the word procrastination, you're going to find, you know, how to stop procrastinating, why you should stop procrastinating, and so on. If you go to Amazon and look for books on procrastination, you're going to find books, including one that says how to cure procrastination, because obviously it's a disease. So is it good or bad? I mean, is it one of those absolute and universal things? Procrastination is bad? Well, it is bad. You procrastinate, you may need more information and don't have enough time to collect it. It might be too late for something that you need, and now, you know, there's not enough time. Schedules sometimes get pulled in, and now all of a sudden you're not ready. Some people stress over deadlines, and the closer you get to the deadline, the harder it is. The more stressed you are. Life happens. You know, all of a sudden, you know that you have the time. You allocated the time. And all of a sudden, something else happens in life. And you don't have the time to do it anymore. Or maybe you just forgot about it. And, you know, the more you wait, the higher the likelihood that you're going to forget it. And there are consequences for missing a deadline. So procrastination is bad, right? Or is it? I'm a procrastinator, by the way. So when you procrastinate, you get more ideas. You have more time to collect ideas. Better alternatives show up. The new information that did not exist before exists now. Ideas get to incubate in your head, which makes them better and connects old ideas to create new ones. You got more people to ask because you have more time to ask them. Sometimes projects get canceled, schedules get pushed out. Do you want to be the person that already spent the time, the effort, and completed a task that got canceled? Things change. Some people are better under pressure. I'm one of them. You know, when I go on stage to give a keynote, the last second that I made changes to this, to my presentation, is typically within 20 minutes from when I get on stage. 20 minutes before I get on stage are the last changes, and you know what? They're good. So is it good or is it bad? Well, here's the thing. It's neither, or it's both. But the thing is that procrastinators trust procrastinators. Non-procrastinators trust non-procrastinators. Procrastinators don't have a problem trusting a non-procrastinator, but it doesn't work the other way around. A non-procrastinator, someone who is stressed over schedules, over deadlines, that want to just get it done, will not trust a procrastinator, typically. Because you know that they're not going to be done on time. You know that when they're done, the quality is not going to be there. There are going to be changes that are needed because you're working on a project together and what they're working on does not comply with what you're working on. And changes will have to be made. There's not going to be enough time. It's all going to fall on you. You know what I'm talking about. So it's not good or bad. It's different, but some people will not trust others, and some people will not trust the former ones. Why is that happening? Because we're all different. We're different in our genetics, in our DNA. We're different in how we were brought up. We were different in where we were brought up, where we live, where we work, where we went to school. And because of that, the same behavior that could cause one person to trust you could cause another person to distrust you. The same behavior. Next, I'm going to show you what does this mean. So trust is relative. The same behavior that would cause one person to trust you could cause another person to distrust you. And because of that, one of the main components in my relative trust model is called personality compatibility. To trust each other, we have to be compatible. We see things differently. I gave you an example with procrastination. Some people are procrastinators, some are non-procrastinators, and that can cause trust issues. Some people are risk takers, and some people do all they can to avoid risk. Those who are risk taker may not have an issue distrusting or trusting people who are risk averse, but people who are risk averse, who do everything in their power to avoid risk, will not trust risk takers because they consider them to be reckless, irresponsible. How about being on time? Some people are on time. To me, I still live by this mantra of early is on time, on time is late, late is unacceptable. And many people, especially military people, think that way, but not everybody. Now, am I going to judge and say that being late is bad, is absolutely bad and universally bad? I'm not going to say that. But in order for two people to trust each other, they both have to be on the same side of this. How about perfectionism versus get it out there? You know, some people would just keep on working on improving whatever deliverable it is, whereas other people would just, you know, it's time to get it out there. Let's get it out there and see how it is out in the field. Those two types of people may not trust each other. Think about Myers-Briggs types, like introverts versus extroverts. Think about other personality types, other personality differences. Like, some people are data-driven, some people are gut-feeling-driven. Those who are data-driven typically don't trust those who are gut-feeling-driven. And those who are gut-feeling-driven sometimes think that people who are data-driven just miss the big picture. There are a lot of ways where we see things differently, and neither one of them is good or bad. And really, it's a matter of to trust each other, we have to have personality compatibility. Now, I have to make it clear, personality compatibility doesn't necessarily mean that we're exactly the same. What it can mean is that we are complementing each other. But that's why it's personality compatibility and not personality similarity or something like this. So we're different in how we look at those things, like being a risk taker versus risk averse, being on time versus being late, and so on. We're different in how we look at them, in our judgment of what's good and what's bad in each one of them, but we're also different in how important these things are. You know, in the Book of Trust, I wrote about President Bill Clinton when he came out on TV and said, "I never had a sexual relationship with that woman." And of course, later he came back and apologized because apparently he lied. And it's not that he lied. What he said was, "No, I did not have a sexual relationship with that woman." So he anchored the word relationship, and he said it wasn't a relationship, so I never lied. But you made us think that you didn't have sex with her. And we do that a lot. Politicians do that a lot, but they're not the only ones. You know, they're saying something, and technically they're right, they're not lying, but the message that comes out of it is something that you know, they're misleading us. I had the same issue with a bond that our school district came out with a few years ago when I served on the board, where the message that was coming out said, "We're not going to change the tax rate." And people did not realize that, yeah, the tax rate is going to be the same, but we know that your property value goes up 8.9%. And as a result, in dollars, you're going to pay 8.9% more dollars, even though the tax rate has not changed. Anyway, I'm getting too deep into that. So back to Clinton. Many people had an issue with the fact that he lied. That ranked very high. And you know, lying again is, or I shouldn't say lied, because it wasn't really a lie. It was misleading. He misled. And many people had an issue with that. I had an issue with the fact that he had sex with someone other than his wife. To me, that ranks high. Does that rank high for everyone? No, not necessarily. But it does to me. So the point I'm trying to make here is that we differ not only in our determination of what's good or what's bad on every item, but also in the priority of what's important and what's less important. Let me switch gears for a second and talk about trust. Why is trust important? One of the things that I do typically is I summarize a lot of research, and I've done that in the Book of Trust. Some of the research was done by me, but most of the research was done by others, and I quote them. Why is trust important? Well, if trust, where trust is high, you have employees in a company have 74% less stress, 106% more energy, 60% more joy at work, 56% higher job set. Okay, I'm not going to take you through the entire list, but I want to touch on a few others. 67% higher autonomy, so you get higher autonomy to do your job. 71% greater ability to hold a constructive disagreement. 240% more willingness to be vulnerable. Companies or teams are 50 to 64% more productive and innovative. Projects end on time, on budget, on spec, 45% more of the time. People charge or customers are willing to pay 30, 40% higher prices if they trust you. Companies, public companies, shareholder returns are 286% higher. So there are a whole lot of reasons. So if someone asks me why they should care about trust, do I just give them the entire list? The answer is no. Different people care about different things, even from that list. What does the CEO care about? Well, if it's a public company, the CEO cares about the higher returns. So if I want to talk to the CEO and tell the CEO, this is very important, and the CEO, this is a public company, trust is very important to your company, do I start with 40% less burnout of your employees? You know, maybe the CEO cares, maybe not. I'm sure that they care, but it's not the higher priority. The highest priority I'm going to give them is 286% higher shareholder returns. What about talking to the vice president of HR? Do I start with higher shareholder returns? No. And I'm not going to say that they don't care about that, but that's not the top of their priority. Top of their priority is going to be 13% fewer sick days. Top of their priority is going to be 76% higher employee engagement. Those are the type of things that the VP of HR cares about the most. How about the VP of sales? Would the VP of sales care about receptivity to feedback? Probably not, or at least not at a very high priority. The VP of sales will care about the fact that customers are willing to pay 30 or 40% higher prices if they trust your company or your salespeople. An engineer will care about better project performance. An engineer will care about getting higher autonomy. A leader will care about employees being more accountable. A team member will care about the ability to hold a constructive disagreement. Different people care about different things. And that's something that's important. So it's not only, there are two differences here in how people, and this is why trust is relative. There are two aspects of how we look differently on different items. One is in our judgment of what's the good side, what's the bad side. So is procrastination good or bad? Is non-procrastination good or bad? Is risk-taking good or bad? So we have different judgment on that. So you might think that risk-taking is bad. I may think that it's good. So we're opposite on how we judge the item, the good or bad of it. But we also differ in the priority that we give to that specific item in order for us to be able to trust someone. So let's take political affiliation. Okay, consider two employees that have different opposite political affiliations. If both of them have political affiliations very low on their priority list, it's not going to prevent them from trusting each other. But if one of them or both have it at a much higher priority, and I ran into people like that did not agree with me politically, but it was so important to them that they could not work with me. Then we differ in that as well. So I gave you the background so far, and now How to be trusted by everyone. Now, first, the disclaimer. You're probably not going to be trusted by everyone, but you can be trusted by a lot more people than you think you can. So the way I look at personality compatibility, and this is going to sound mathematical, mainly because it is the sum of the products of how much they care about something and how compatible you are on that item. So the how compatible you are, if I think that risk-taking is good and you think that risk-taking is bad, we're not compatible. If we both think it's good or we both think it's bad, we are compatible. So it's that, it's the compatibility factor multiplied by how important it is for every person. And now we add all those up to determine the level of personality compatibility. How do you know that? Well, you know that first by knowing what they care about. So you have to ask, you have to figure out what is it that they care about more and what do they care about less. And for each one of those, you have to determine how compatible you are. In order for them to trust you, in order for you to be trusted by them, I'm glad I don't have a grammar checker that would say, this is passive voice. As long as you want to be trusted by them, you should emphasize what they care about the most and where you are on the same side. Those are the things that you want to emphasize. You know, we may not be on the same side of risk-taking, so maybe that's not something that I want to bring up in the conversation. But we are on the same side of procrastination, and it seems that this is important to you, so I'm going to bring this up in the conversation. So you emphasize what they care about the most and where you're on the same side, and you minimize the things they care about the least because, you know, they don't care about them, or things that where you're on opposite sides. So back to the PCTEL story, and the same happened to me, by the way, when I was interviewed for Vice President of Strategy at Interphase and was hired and worked there for seven years. When I talked to the CEO, I emphasized aspects of my personality, experience, competence, I don't know, perceptions, perspectives, that I knew that the CEO would care about. When I talked to the head of HR, to the VP of HR, I focused on things that I know that they cared about and emphasized how we are on the same side on some of those things. The vice president of HR did not care about my knowledge of technology. But when I talked to the chief technology officer, I focused on my technical background, my understanding of the technologies that they're working on and new directions. Not about human resource issues, because the CTO doesn't care about that. When I talked to the head of engineering, I focused on project management, which is what he cared about the most in my experience in that. When I talked to the head of marketing, I talked about other things. The head of sales, I talked about other things. So I focused in every interaction with the person, I focused on what they care about the most and that we are on the same side. And that's how I became trusted by different people. And that's how, if they all got together at the end and started describing the person they talked to, they would think that they talked to different persons, different people. In reality, they talked to the same person, but they were exposed to different aspects of the same person. Now, here's the thing. What happens if they care about something a lot, but you're on opposite sides? You are incompatible on that aspect. I want to be very clear. Don't lie. Don't hide it. This is going to come up at some point. When it comes up, it is an incompatibility that will not be overcome, but it will also show that you lied and that you misled them. So if you have a reason to believe that you are incompatible in something that they care about, that you know that they care about, that you know they have a high priority for that, you want to bring this up and you want to see if this is going to be a problem. You know what? Even if this is a one-time interaction, even in a one-time interaction, bring it up. Don't launch an interaction, even if there's not a long-term relationship that comes out of it. Don't launch based on deceit, based on misleading them. You know, again, my series of mini books called Can I Trust You? Each one of them addresses a different different role in companies, in organizations, such as salespeople, project managers, team members, leaders, consultants, and so on. Each one of them, the subtitle is something like 70 plus one habits that will make you a more trusted leader. Now, and one is 50 plus one habits that will make you a trustworthy salesperson. And 67 plus one, it's not that I don't know how much would it be if you add the one. It's just that the plus one is different. It's different because the plus one really says the same thing in all relationships, and that is know when to give up. Know when there is a compatibility that cannot be overcome. Now, notice that I said cannot be overcome, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes. There is one muscle that you have to exercise in order to be good at this, and that's empathy. Empathy is actually one of the components of the what you do part of the relative trust model, my relative trust model. It's another reason why empathy is important, because empathy is, if you know my definition of empathy, is that it's your ability and willingness to see things from the other person's perspective as if you were them. Okay? So the better you are at empathy, the better you are in determining what's important to them and where do they stand on the issue. Are you compatible or incompatible? That's where empathy is important. By the way, the more you do that, the more you practice empathy, it would actually help you be more trusted, period. People like to be listened to. People like to be cared about. So just the fact that you're asking, that you're trying to figure out what's important to them, what's less important to them, the fact that you're even doing your homework before meeting them is important for your trustworthiness. It might not be enough, but it is important. It's only one of six components, but it is important. And that's why it is part of the what you do part of the relative trust model. So exercise your empathy. You're going to have to use empathy to be able to determine what they care about more, what they care about less, and where do they stand on things, especially the things that they care about more. So you found what they care about, and you find that you are incompatible. So what do you do if you're incompatible? You know, if this is something that's not very important, then maybe you shouldn't do anything about it as long as you are compatible in the more important things. If it's more important to them, higher on their priority list, then maybe you want to do something about it. Now, so story. Again, back to when I worked at Texas Instruments, my boss, I consider myself a visionary, and I have those crazy ideas, and I went to her with crazy ideas. And it's like every time I would come up with something, I could tell from her face, from her react, from her body language, that she would develop an immediate allergic reaction to my idea. And it would happen time after time. And she would say no a lot more than she would say yes, even though I had, if I don't mind saying so myself, pretty good ideas. So, it really frustrated me that she would have that reaction, even though the ideas were not bad. And one day, I just asked her, you know, when I'm trying to convince you with something, do you prefer that I start with the bottom line. I'm a bottom line first person. So if you want to convince me with something, you have to give me the bottom line. Because the bottom line gives me context to what you're going to say next. So tell me what the bottom line is. Tell me where we're going to end this journey, and then give me the support information that would support it. And I can ask questions about things that may not support it. But I'm a bottom line first person. Well, so I asked her, do you prefer to get the bottom line first, or do you want me to take you through my entire thought process and only at the end tell you the, and therefore, here's the bottom line. This is what I'm asking. This is what I'm suggesting. Well, to my surprise, she said, I'm the second. I'm the latter. I'd like you to take me through your thought process and only at the end give me the bottom line. Well, that was a surprise for me. But it wasn't too hard to change, at least not when I talked to her. I realized that that was important to her. In order for her to trust me with something that I suggested, she needed me to take her through the thought process and finish with the bottom line. That was it. We were different on something that was important to her, not important enough to me. What can I do about it? So the big question that I have to ask is, can I change? The can I change is made of two parts. I have to be willing and I have to be able to change. Well, I was able. It's not that hard to say whenever I talk to her, I have to take her through the thought process and finish with the bottom line. Whenever I talk to somebody else, by the way, I did do a survey afterwards, and I found that 76% of people would prefer to get the bottom line first. That's the majority. I think it was 17% or something like that that would rather get the thought process first and the bottom line at the end, and 9% that didn't care. Something like that. And if you look at the correlation of people, you'd find that in 3 out of 4 cases, they're the same. So either they want the bottom line first or the bottom line last. Either way, they're the same in 76% of the time. So in 74 point something, I'm sorry, 3 out of 4, okay? But in 1 out of 4 cases, they're not on the same side on this, which would cause distrust. But again, this was not very hard for me to change. So the two questions on can I change? Do I have the ability to change it? Do I have the will to change it? The willingness to change it is really an intrinsic motivator. So the benefit of if I change it, then she would accept more of my ideas. That's the motivation. It's not a very strong motivation, but the effort is not very strong. And one thing that I always say is that you do things, we do things, because our motivation is greater than the effort. And in this case, effort is not that high. Now, the ability to do it, sometimes what you might need is to actually form new habits. And that's why I created Trust Habits. Trust Habits is a 7-step process that would allow you to form new habits that change old behaviors. So as far as the starting with the bottom line versus starting with the rationale or with the thought process, that didn't require new habits. But some things do require new habits. And so when it goes to the ability, this would be where you launch on a trust habits process to form new habits that change old behaviors to build that trust. Okay, so if you find that you are different than the other person on something that's important to them that would cause them not to trust you, you have to ask yourself, can I change it? In other words, do I have the will and do I have the ability? Ability can use the trust habits process to make it easier and more permanent. But okay. Again, back to the previous thing that I said, the plus one, and that is, what if you can't? What if you don't have the willpower or the ability to change? So take, for example, political affiliation. Back to political affiliation. For most people, well, I'm not even going to say for most people. typically, I think that political affiliation would not play a key role in trust between people in the workplace. I'm not talking about in the polling booth or in political context. Can you change your political affiliation? Of course you can. It's very easy. You start voting the other way. That's it. From today, I stop being a Republican, I start being a Democrat. Or I stop being a Democrat, I start being a Republican. It's easy. Do I have the willpower? No, I don't. I don't want to change. I believe what I believe. I don't want to change that. So if this is important, if this is not important to the other person, that's not a big deal. It's not going to affect trust. Not significantly anyway. If it is important, that's a plus one. This is know when to give up. And this is the end of this episode, so let me summarize it. Can you be trusted by everyone? Well, not really. I know that I was a little misleading in the title. You can't be trusted by everyone. Most likely you can't. But you can be trusted by more people than you may think. The same behavior that would cause one person to trust you could cause another person to distrust you. That's why you're not automatically trusted by everyone. There is no one good, right or wrong for everyone, except for very few things like telling a lie or telling the truth. So in order to be trusted by more people, you need to emphasize what's important to the other person and where you are compatible, and they will trust you more. And de-emphasize what's less important to them or where you're incompatible. Again, be careful. If there is a strong incompatibility that you cannot change and don't have the willingness to change, and it's important to the other person, you probably want to do that up front and know when to give up. You're not going to be trusted by that person. But that's going to be the minority of cases. In most cases, when you find an incompatibility that is important to them or even moderately important to them, and you have the willpower and you have the capability to change, you can change. I hope from this episode you didn't get that I'm telling you how to mislead people to trust you. That's not what I'm trying to do here. What I'm trying to do is to help you find reasons for other people to trust you. Individual reasons for different individuals, because trust is relative. The reasons are already there or that are easy to achieve. This is it for today. May trust be with you. This was The Trust Show. What would you like to know about trust and trustworthiness? Let me know and I'll answer it in a future episode. I would love to hear from you. Email me at yoram@thetrustshow.com. If you like this episode, subscribe to the show so you will automatically get notified when I release a new episode. Rate it. Write a review for this podcast, because those ratings help not only you, but also others looking for podcasts just like this. If you're looking for more resources to learn about how to build trust, be trusted, or know who to trust, look up my workshops, online courses, books, or go to my website, trusthabits.com. And remember that the answer to these two questions will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can I trust you? And can you trust me? Thank you for listening or watching The Trust Show.